Welcome to Torah Tzimecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Stacey Nechama Goldman, and today we will be studying Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Yod Chet, Chapter 18. This chapter details the many battles David fought and won as his kingship grew stronger. In addition to his military successes, he also accumulated massive amounts of wealth. Why does this follow immediately after his request to build the Beit HaMikdash in the last chapter is rejected? Rashi offers an interesting answer that highlights David's graciousness as well as his humility. And it came to pass afterwards that David smote. After David stated his intention to build a house, and the Holy One, blessed be He, said to him, "You shall not build," David said, "Since it is not incumbent upon me to build the house, only upon my son, I shall now prepare and arrange everything for him for the time when my son comes to build the house, so that he has everything prepared." And now he, the chronicler, leaves everything and relates how he, David, prepared the building, how he fought with his enemies and designated their spoils for the construction of the house. While David knows he will not be the one to build the Beit HaMikdash, he does everything he can to expedite the process for his future son. After defeating the Moabites, David then turned to Tzoba. Malbim notes that the location Chamat is added to this verse, which is not mentioned in the parallel passage of Shmuel Bet, chapter 8. Bayach David et Hadad Azer, Melech Tzoba Chamata, Belechto Lehatziv Yado Binhar Prat. And David smote Hadarezer, king of Tzoba, in Chamat, when he went to establish his power in the Euphrates River. Malbim explains that the addition of the word Chamat shows David's strategic planning, since Chamat was on the border of Israel near the Euphrates River. He explains that Hadarezer was enemies with Tou, who we will see in verse 10 sent gifts to David as a result of David defeating Hadarezer. Malbim reads into this that he saw the ambitions of Hadarezer's desire to control the Euphrates through attacking Tou, and preempted his own attack against Hadarezer to prevent his accessibility to the Euphrates River. There is one major discrepancy between our chapter and the parallel chapter in Shmuel Bet, chapter 8. Verse 4 of our chapter reads, "Vayolkod David mimenu, elef rechev v'shivat alafim prashim, v'esrim elef ish ragli, vayaker David et kol harechev v'yoter mimenu mea rechev." And David captured from him 1,000 chariots and 7,000 horsemen and 20,000 footmen. And David hamstrung all the chariot horses and left over of them 100 chariots. The verse in Shmuel has a wildly different number. Verse 4 from Shmuel Bet, chapter 8, "And David captured from him 1,700 horsemen and 20,000 footmen. And David huffed all the chariots, horses, and left over of them for 100 chariots." Our verse says David captured 1,000 chariots and 7,000 horsemen. Shmuel records 1,000 chariots and only 700 horsemen. Radak explains that in Shmuel, they were perhaps only counting the officers in their tally. He also explains the significance of telling us that David hamstrung all the chariot horses. This was out of obeisance to the mitzvah on a king not to acquire too many horses in Devarim chapter 17, verse 16. We see another example of David's desire to contribute to building the temple, despite his inability to carry it out, in verse 8. Umitivchat umikun, arei Hadadezer, lakach David nechoshet rabba meod, ba asa Shlomo et yam hanechoshet, ve'ata amudim ve'et klei hanechoshet. And from Tivchat and from Kun, cities of Hadarezer, David took huge quantities of copper, from which Shlomo made the copper sea and the pillars and the copper vessels. Rashi explains, huge quantities of copper from which he made, etc. This is what I stated in verse 17:1. Since David stated his intention to build the house, and the Holy One, blessed be He, said to him in 17:4, "You shall not build the house, but your son," he proceeds to tell how he prepared for him to erect the edifice. Further strengthening David's resolve in showing his commitment is verse 11. גם אותם הקדיש המלך דוד להשם עם הכסף והזהב אשר נשא מכל הגויים, מאדום וממואב ומבני עמון ומפלישתים ומעמלק. Those also King David dedicated to the Lord, along with the silver and the gold that he took from all the nations, from Edom and from Moab and from the children of Ammon and from the Philistines and from Amalek. Verse 12 is the first to mention the accomplishments of one of David's warriors besides himself. Ve'avshai ben Tzruya hika et Edom bege hamelech shmona asar elef. And Avshai, the son of Tzruya, smote the Edomites in the Valley of Salt, 18,000. Mitzudat David points out that this battle is credited to David in the book of Shmuel and to Yoav in Tehillim, chapter 60, verse 2. He explains that it was common to attribute all battles to the king, and he quotes a midrash that says Yoav and Avishai, both nephews of David, each fought different battles. While this chapter focuses on military victory, we can also see certain clues to David's character as a ruler, both towards his own people and even to his enemies. The parallel passage in Shmuel Bet chapter 8 to verse 12, quoted above, includes another event that occurred during that war, namely that David made for himself a name. Rashi there explains, and David made for himself a name, for he buried the dead that were killed of Edom. Now this resulted in a good name for Israel, for granting burial to their enemies. Similarly, it is stated concerning the battle of Gog and Magog, and all the people of the land shall bury them, and it shall be for them for a name, Ezekiel 39:13. And how do we know that David buried them? Because it is written in the book of Kings, chapter 2, verse 15. For when David was in Edom, and Yoav, the captain of the hosts, had gone up to bury the slain. We can only imagine the novelty of a king treating the dead bodies of his enemies with respect during this period of the ancient world. We are told more explicitly about his leadership in verse 14. Vayimloch David al kol Yisrael vayhi oseh mishpat utzdakah lechol amo. And David reigned over all Israel, and he administered justice and charity for all his people. Which attributes are included in Mishpat and Tzedakah? Mishpat is the less complex of the two to translate. It comes from the same word as Shofet, judge, and implies fairness according to the law. Tzedakah, on the other hand, seems to mean different things in different contexts. We see here that the translation says charity. Charity is defined as voluntary giving, which implies zero obligation, simply giving whatever you feel like donating, for no reason at all. What does it mean to administer both justice and charity? Doesn't one contradict the other? How is it just to give someone something they did not earn? In a discussion of how truth and peace can coexist, the Gemara sets forth the option of mediation, forming a compromise between two disputing parties rather than having the judge execute a judgment. The Gemara Sanhedrin 6b brings our pasuk as an explanation. And similarly, with regard to David, it says, and David executed justice and charity to all his people. And is it not that wherever there is strict justice, there is no charity? And wherever there is charity, there is no strict justice? Rather, which is the justice that has within it charity? You must say, this is mediation. The problem with this solution is that there were rabbis at the time who forbade mediation. They felt that the true just law must always be applied. In order to abide by that opinion, the Gemara must provide another explanation for David's method of leadership, combining judgment and charity. This reveals another layer of David's generous character. We come to the opinion of the first Tana, Rabbi Eliezer, son of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, who says that it is prohibited to mediate a dispute. If a judge adjudicated a case of monetary law, and he correctly exonerated the party who was exempt from payment and deemed liable the party who was liable to pay, if he then saw that due to his ruling, a poor person became liable to pay an amount of money that is beyond his means, and therefore the judge himself paid for him from his own house. This is justice and also charity. David would get it over the just verdict, but if the one found liable could not afford the penalty, David himself would pay the fee, an act of charity. A different Gemara notes a juxtaposition of this verse with the next, verse 15. V'yoav ben Tsruya al hatzava, v'hoshafat ben Achilud maskir. Now Yoav, the son of Tsruya, was over the host, and Yehoshaphat, the son of Achilud, was recorder. This Gemara, in Sanhedrin 49a, tells us that David's ability to lead in this way was dependent on Yoav's role as the general of the army. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana says, were it not for David, who studied Torah, Yoav would not have been able to wage war successfully. And were it not for the military acumen of Yoav, David would not have been able to study Torah, as it is written, and David executed judgment and justice to all his people, and Yoav, son of Tsruya, was over the army. What is the reason that David executed judgment and justice to all his people? He was able to do so because of Yoav, son of Tsruya, was over the army, assisting him in fighting his battles. And what is the reason that Yoav, son of Tsruya, was over the army? He was able to do so because David executed judgment and justice to all his people. Being a good and just leader also means having other qualified people by your side and appreciating what they can add to the leader's ability to govern. Perhaps this is why our chapter ends with a list of those in leadership positions under David's rule. Thank you for studying together. Le'ilui Nishmat, Malka Esther Bat Zvi Yosef.